What's up, guys? This is Tyler Lawrence Gray, and you're listening to Wolfpack on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Not a Teen Wolf spinoff.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode number 165. Today, we are talking about Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 7, Lion's Breath, the penultimate episode of this season of Season 1. My name is Karen, and I'm joined by Natalie. How are you today, Natalie?
Hi, I'm okay. I'm okay.
Neither one of us is okay, but
I have like every hour of my day is like triple booked and questioning whether I'm making the right use of time, but you know, we've got some time for wolves, so that's fine.
Yeah. This season really is ramping up, and I'm like kind of disappointed that next week is the finale, because I'm like, I want more. Like, episodes doesn't feel like enough. I still have so many questions. I'll be curious to see how long the finale is, if they're gonna go a little bit over with that one.
Oh yeah, like a 70 minute kind of Game of Thrones style.
But
I don't know, they might have that freedom. They may have that freedom. I don't know.
Yeah, I think most of these episodes have been around the 50-minute mark, give or take a couple of minutes. I don't think any of them have really, you know, stretched one direction or the other. But so far, all the episodes seem pretty jam-packed, full of information, good pacing and everything. So I'm not too worried about it. I just don't want to give up the show so soon because I have so many thoughts about it.
Confusing thoughts.
Yeah, confusing.
I don't know. Maybe you've got solid thoughts. This time?
This time, I mean, a little bit more this time, but still lots of questions. Luckily, we have plenty of other things to think about in the meantime between this season and potentially a season two. So that's great. Everything is fine.
Yeah.
If you would like to reach out to us, leave us a message, leave us some of your thoughts, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at NATW Podcast. You can find us on Tumblr at noneotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. And you can email us at natwpodcast@gmail.com. We'd really appreciate hearing from you and just seeing what you think of the show and if you want a season two. This week, we are talking about episode 7, Lion's Breath. And I want to jump right into this because this opening scene, to me at least, was by far the scariest scene in the show up until this point.
Oh, yeah. It was really drawn out. And it took me a good minute to realize whether the guy was really in his house or not, like, as well. Like, a good while. I was like, I think probably up until Phoebe, I was like, at first I was like, it's a vision. And then I was like, no, he's there. He's come and freaking out in the house. He's there. And then I was like, no, he's not there. Like, it really took a while, to be honest. I'm glad I'm not alone with that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I could barely look at the screen, to be honest. Like, I was, you know, taking my little notes and I was like, we're really concentrating on the notes right now. Let's just write down everything that I can see out of the corner of my eye, because you know, and I like horror. Yeah. Honestly, this was like really, really good. And there's some different elements that they played with that I want to get into. It was really good, but it was really creepy. And basically, you know, Everett wakes up and he sees Baron in his room. But as soon as he tries to say his name, Baron wolfs out and then disappears. And this is, you know, at first you're like, oh, yeah, he's totally a vision. Like, this is kind of what happened earlier. And I was like, why did you wait?
Just open, just be like, Baron, like, oh, it's you. Straight away. You don't have to make like this dramatic announcement.
I know. And he was like,
yeah.
It was really frustrating. But
fine, fair enough.
I know, what was going on. But And then Everett goes into the bathroom and we see him looking at his pills, thinking about his pills. And I didn't know if the takeaway here was like, if he's wondering if this is like a side effect of skipping his medication.
Yeah, I don't either. It's kind of like, you know, we're meant to think that he had like a trembly, you know, trembly hands before and now he doesn't. And and whether that's like him feeling more empowered and stronger. I have a feeling that something that you've pointed out later is going to play into like what we're taking away from this. Like, I think that Everett's getting a bit ahead of himself, I'll say at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think the ongoing takeaway of the show is going to be like treating mental health with medication bad. I think we're going to see a bad result of him not taking the medication, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm really interested in that, especially I know exactly what you're talking about, what scene you're talking about, because that was very intriguing. So I guess we'll revisit that and then see if we have any theories about that. But while he's in the bathroom, we see Baron in the mirror and his back is to Everett. So Everett is staring at Baron's back, but every time Everett moves, Baron moves. And this was really chilling, really weird. And I didn't know if we're meant, like, if is this just to spook us or is there some sort of significance to like them being tied together? I mean, we obviously know Baron's inside Everett's head, but this whole like they move at the same time thing, this connected like I'm controlling your body kind of thing. I didn't know if we were meant to like read more deeply into it.
I don't either, to be honest. I really don't. It could be some level of that sync. It could be the projection element. It could be like that when it's a projection of the person, they're more linked than they would be in reality. I don't know if that makes sense, but it makes sense in my head.
Yeah.
Like as in like when they're linked psychically, they can only mirror each other. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously that doesn't happen all the time because they're moving independently for the rest of the scene. But I wonder if, yeah, if it's meant to just be like more of a link, more of like, you know, is Baron inside Everett's head? Is Everett inside Baron's head? Is it like a two-way street, a two-way mirror kind of thing? And we kind of have this question too with Everett and Blake in terms of their like sexy daydreams and stuff. Like, does that go both ways? Are they experiencing it at the same time or is it kind of more one-sided?
That is a great question. I absolutely don't have a clue. It's been very unclear to me, to say the least.
Yeah. But we don't really get to find out much more about that because then Baron is right in front of him and he looks pissed and then he screams in agony as he catches on fire, which I feel like this is kind of straightforward. We know he got corrupted in the fire, but it was still kind of sudden and scary. And then you just have Everett following him throughout the house. Baron, like, running toward the door, like, gave me goosebumps. I was so scared. They did such a good job of making this like really, really chilling and at every turn, not really knowing what's going to happen next because Baron actually talks to him for the first time too. Like we actually do get some answers here. He says that he can't stop it from hurting people, that it's not him doing it because he wouldn't do something like this.
And he's like control. We're going to that place where it's like the monster is separate and controlling.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was my question was, is he talking about like his werewolf form, like the animal form taking over where he can't control it?
Yeah. I think the corrupted animal form, the fire corrupted monster as opposed to his natural wolf.
Right. You know, he's awake, he can see out the windshield, but he's not driving the car. Or is there another monster? Which like, I think the implication here is that it is his werewolf form, but I thought it was interesting to think about the possibility that he's actually talking about something separate from himself that is making, like, controlling him like an alpha would control a pack member or something.
Yeah. It's very confusing. And I think one thing that we are dealing with here is, like, you know, a level of, I guess, the mythology, the rules of werewolfdom that are not something that we have necessarily experienced before, certainly mm-hmm. not in Teen Wolf, but it's like there are so many options, right, for like what yeah. you could do. And this is like we're having to work. There's no like base canon of like what the rules of a werewolf are. This mythology's rules are somewhat new to us and we mm-hmm. don't know. Basically.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is the characters don't know either. They're guessing a lot too, which I find to be very different and intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very clueless, despite yeah. the fact that they are werewolves. They're very yeah. clueless. So that's also kind of cool to me in a way. Like mm-hmm. it's like it's a different kind of angle to have them as werewolves, basically trying to fight against the fire werewolf. And yeah, their werewolf powers come into it at the end of it, but it's less like this is a werewolf thing and more just like these are some plucky kids trying to yeah. stop a monster, you know? Like, yes, their powers come into it at the end of the episode, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting too that when we're talking about their powers, we're talking about like, oh, she can smell real good, you know? Like, it isn't the normal werewolf powers where they
crazy transform. Fighting and stuff.
Yeah. But I do find it really interesting, this whole like semi-unreliable narrator, that we're kind of along for the ride. We don't really know anything because they don't really know anything. I think it lends a little bit more empathy to them because they are kind of clueless and we're trying to, you know, figure it out right alongside them. And I do like that.
Yeah.
This scene, the cold open of the show, concludes with water cascading down the stairs. And we see Phoebe lying dead right there in front of Everett. And she warns him that if he pisses off the werewolf, it'll come for him next. So this is not, you know, my pack comes first kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
you don't hurt a member of your family. Like, they have to be careful.
It is very unusual, the dynamic of, like, who is with us and who is against us
mm-hmm.
in this. It's very, like, yeah, like I said, like, it's kind of a bit all over the place in terms of who is an ally and who is an enemy. And it's just not the most normal kind of team ups. It's not necessarily coming from that place of, like, I guess, like you said, like that base pack energy. It's much more rational and it's much more grounded in, yeah, the human dynamic, like I said, of kind of trying to stop this monster. And it's, yeah, it's just a bit unusual, I think. I don't know. It's like nothing about any of the dynamics in this show have been what I was in any way predicting or expecting.
Yeah.
Basically. I don't know. Yeah, that's what I've got to say. It's kind of just like a bit all on its head. Like, yeah. I don't know. Don't know how to describe it better.
No, I agree, because I think werewolves are a very classic story. They've obviously been around forever. There's been many different iterations. We are very well versed in one particular werewolf show, and this feels really fresh. Like, this feels different. And we talked a lot about the tone and like what kind of audience that this show is for, and I think that's all a part of a bigger picture. And it also includes the mystery and all of these rules that we're not totally clear on yet. And I, you know, like, I do really like this show, like, trying to be as unbiased as I can. Like, I really do enjoy this show because it's kept me entertained. And every time I sit down to watch a new episode, I'm like, okay, what part of the puzzle are we going to get next? Like, it very much draws me in and has kept me hooked for 7 episodes. But I'm also very interested to see how season 1 concludes, because that could end up coloring a lot of what we thought about season 1 as a whole, and if there is a season 2, how it'll transition us into that, which is maybe a conversation for later. But, you know, just thinking about everything we still don't know with only 1 episode left, it's kind of hard not to think about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Once again, it's just, it's a fast and it's a full ride, basically. Like, mm-hmm. it's just very fast, very complicated,
mm-hmm.
a lot of characters,
yeah,
not a lot of answers, and, you know, quite a lot of development, but still, like, I'm kind of getting the vibe when they said way back at New York Comic Con, where they were like, season one is almost just like the setup of our concept.
Yeah, I keep thinking about that. You know what I mean? Too.
Like,
yeah.
like I feel like where we're at now, we're just like prequel territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Which makes that's what me I've been excited thinking about. That, like, okay, there's a whole, like, if this is just the setup, then there's a whole lot more to come. This is probably going to get blown wide open by the end of season one, and that's just going to make me way more excited about season two. But let's get back to episode seven, which is at the end of this scene, Phoebe also tells Everett who will be next. She opens her mouth, her jaw kind of unhinges in that creepy horror way. And
that needed to not have happened.
Yeah,
that was just not okay with it.
And yeah, it was really uncomfortable. But what I thought was interesting is that she didn't say the name. She didn't even project the voice. She just projected the piano music.
Yeah, I didn't care for it.
It was super creepy, but I actually really liked it because it was a great way of, you know, we automatically know, okay, it's going to be Austin. And I just thought that it was a really different way to kind of tell the audience and to tell Everett who was going to be the next victim.
Yeah, but did they have to do it with the mouth?
I mean, I'm going to say if we ask Jeff that question, his answer is going to be yes.
Yes, we did it to hurt you.
You specifically, Natalie Fisher.
And just, her being dead and talking and like a bit surreal with her dead talking was one mm-hmm. thing. But the extreme mouth was just very yeah. strange.
It's so interesting to me, too, that Everett sees Phoebe, because if you really try to get into, like, okay, why? Like, why did he see Phoebe when they didn't see any of the other victims?
Yeah, like, how is this real mm-hmm. in any way? Like, they have gotten information from the ghost of Phoebe.
Yeah.
Is that actually a projection from Baron? Like, does that's Baron my know? Guess. Because, like, it's not that Phoebe's ghost suddenly exists. It's more right. about Baron's projection.
Yeah. This is the most time that Everett has spent with Baron in his head. So the idea that what Baron has experienced can bleed over into Everett's subconsciousness does make sense to me. My question is, like, is this Baron telling him? Like, is Baron trying to tell him who the next victim is without actually yeah. saying it out loud?
I don't know. I don't care yeah. for it. It's very confusing. It's very stressful.
Yeah.
It's very, like, it is a way to give us some information.
Mm-hmm.
That is my most neutral set. It is a way to give us some information. It is a choice they have made.
It is, yeah.
I think my only, like I said, like you just said, like the first thought of it being Baron and his information, as opposed to we've suddenly decided that the ghosts of these victims exist, is what makes the most sense to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Maybe the ghosts
what exist. What if yeah. this is Mortal Kombat?
Oh.
And when the werewolf okay. bites somebody, he ingests their soul. And so the ghosts exist
okay.
alongside okay. Baron.
Like that he has these people, like he's trapped. Imbibed their knowledge or their yeah. image or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
not all that crazy compared to what we've seen so far.
And is she the one that at this point in the story, sorry, I might just be mixing up when this happens, but she's the one who's like, he's fine with you for now, but if you piss it off, he'll turn against you.
Yeah.
And Everett's like, but he's my pack. And she's like, he can make more.
Yeah.
That's Phoebe's ghost thing that says that.
Yep.
Right? So if that's Baron, what do you make of that coming from Baron?
I mean, it sounded very threatening when she said it, but I honestly think that this was meant to be helpful. Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it was meant to be helpful because otherwise, like, there's no need to, like, threaten him with this stuff. They're already terrified, and this is giving them legitimate information about how to save the next person and, like, to be careful.
It's very, yeah, it's very, very there, very happening.
Yes.
I don't.
Okay.
happening.
Let's move on to something a little bit easier because the next morning, Garrett wakes up. When I say easier, he wakes up with his gun in his hand and a bunch of silver bullets on his desk. Now, my takeaway from this was he was potentially trying to, and failing, to stay awake all night in case the pack might come back after him. Was that your read on that?
You know what? I don't know why he was trying to stay awake. Obviously, he was in a bad place with the kids because of Cyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually don't know. He certainly just knows that, you know, they're waiting to talk to Harlan. He does know that because they come over, she comes over and it's like late. Yeah, just I think waiting for them and obviously the kids sneak out before he speaks to them because they're angry at him.
Yeah.
You know, they've all had a bad experience. So it could have just been accidental. It could have been like I was sitting up brooding and I fell asleep on the desk.
Yeah. I think, you know, those bullets there were pretty pointed and maybe he was trying to protect them. And I think that would read very well considering like he goes and sees their heights on the door frame with the little notes and he has a good little cry. I was thinking of you during this scene. I thought you would like this quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a good way of kind of reflecting on the dynamic of the family and just, you know, and reflecting on the history of the family compared to the current state of it. Like it's a fairly good device to use in that moment. It's,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This whole scene with Garrett by himself was just so interesting because, you know, the bullets aren't in the gun, but they're there available. Is he trying to protect them? Is he worried that they almost attacked him once, that maybe it could happen again? We kind of just don't know, but I think that him seeing the door frame and everything definitely goes to show that he obviously still cares about them.
Yeah, no, that's not a question. Like,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, it's just like facing the music, you know, that after all this time, maybe like that, you know, was this always going to erupt like this someday or... You know, he was sort of kind of savoring them as his kids while he could because he knew maybe one day everything would really badly fuck up.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the werewolf thing would come back to bite at a point.
Yeah. But he doesn't get too much time to himself because Kristen does show up. She wants to talk to Harlan about Cyrus, but she settles for Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
She obviously knows more than what she's letting on. We've known that for a while, but she tosses him his bullet casing saying the techs almost thought it was a silver bullet. And Garrett lies really easily and saying, oh, it's just nickel plated brass. And I, at this point, like, I kind of feel like she's toying with him.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. She definitely doesn't want to be the one to spill the beans.
Yeah. Like, I think she's smart
enough.
But I don't
know what she wants from him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think she's smart enough not to show her hand until she can be sure that he'll be on her side. She already knows that he knows, right? But
she knows. Yeah, she must. I think that she knows or very much assumes that the kids are werewolves, that he is in the loop and that he has had them from birth, that he has raised them well from birth, him and his two adopted children who are very likely her biological children.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, everything Christian says, it's so loaded. Mm-hmm. Like, like she just like everything. She's like dropping the hints. Yeah. Here and there. I don't know if she's wanting Garrett to pick them up or if it's just meant to be for us. Like, you know, I feel like she knows that Garrett has loved some werewolf children, mm-hmm. and perhaps could love a werewolf single mother too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got that vibe later in the episode. Like, yeah.
It's definitely, like, she hasn't had anyone to relate to at all. And here's this hot man who could be very relatable in that way.
Yeah.
But still feels he might be an enemy.
Right. Yeah, I think she's really waiting to see if he's going to be on her side. But I think this episode really starts to, at least for us, we really start to see what's potentially like behind that mask that she wears. Because we've said in multiple episodes how empathetic she is, how good she is with kids, how she's really good at her job, and all of that kind of stuff. And it just, at this point, now that we've seen a little bit more of her, it feels very practiced, very like not forced in a bad way, because it does come off as natural, but like very pointed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she's had incredibly strong ambitions. Like, this is like taking the idea that she is like the werewolf mama, that her husband, shitty husband, and one son were killed in this fire, except the kid wasn't killed, and I guess got separated from some other babies. I don't know what that family was doing on the day-to-day before the fire, if it was like, if they lived human lives and just went out for bonding run moments in the woods, you know, like, oh, we're taking our babies to commune with nature or something, you know.
What if they were normal people? Can only birth puppies.
Okay, not to take away from mothers who've lost babies who are like infants. Yeah, it's very possible that they can. But the way she talks about being a mother and losing a child, losing a son, before now it kind of sounded like, you know, it was a kid that she knew, like a kid who she had difficult time with, not an infant. Like, yeah, losing an infant is a really big deal, but it's a different kind of big deal to, like, I know what it was like to struggle with my son and have a back and forth, you know, like, and that's kind of how it was implied before. So maybe there's something a little bit not quite right about my theory, but if we have the idea that her shitty werewolf husband, herself, and the kids were living in the woods full time and not interacting with society, or were they out, were they people who just went out to be in the woods and commune with nature for a camping trip or something? You know, like, which one is it?
Yeah.
You know, we don't know, like, did she just burst out of the woods fully formed, naked and on fire, and decide to become an arson investigator because of what was done to her werewolf family? Or was she in this line before? I have a feeling that what happened must have inspired, like, that dedication of, like, this is, like, a problem I need to fix. This is a problem I need to solve. But I really don't know what to think of, like, who she was before the fire that we see in this episode.
Yeah. I hope we get some of those answers, because I'm very interested. And, you know, just kind of wrapping up this scene right here, you know, she wants him to bring Harlan to her office as soon as possible. And she ensures him that he won't need a lawyer, because she knows he had nothing to do with the fire, which is very comforting, until she says, "I'll protect him as if he was one of my own."
How did you react when she said this?
I was like, oh. I mean, I can't say that I'm, like, surprised, because we've been kind of, like, putting this together one piece at a time. This was definitely one of our strongest theories. But there's several times where I wrote down quotes from this episode, which I don't normally do.
Yeah.
Because they were so pointed and so informative, even though the characters weren't necessarily understanding the significance of those statements. But we sure as hell were. Like,
hint, 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 hint.
Yeah.
I was just like, seriously? Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to only get more interesting from here. But yeah. Everett explains what happened with Baron to the pack now. So all four of them are together. He tells them what he saw. Harlan tries to make a little bit of a joke, and Everett is just unashamed of how fucking terrified he was. And I really loved that for him, because I would have been like, yeah, it was scary. So?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Like, it's for some reason, I was really reminded of, I've been doing a lot of work with Ted Lasso in the last few weeks. I was reminded of, do you remember in the first season when they are burning their emotional objects to free the curse?
Yeah.
Do you remember this? And Roy brings in a blanket, and he was like talking about how his grandfather gave it to him when he drove him up from London to Sunderland. For context, that's like a 10-hour trip. Like, he was going to effectively like boarding school for football training, and how he's being left there on his own. And he was like, I was on my own and I was scared and something. And one of the other players, I think it's Isaac, laughs. And he'd said before, like, he was like, I was 9 and blah, blah. And Roy's like, what? I was fucking 9. Like, as in, like, you want to say something kind of thing.
Yeah.
And for some reason, this moment with Everett really reminded me of that. Just that level of, like, someone laughing at fear and the person being like, yeah. And it kind of, like, puts the other person in their place.
Yeah, it deflates the whole situation.
Yeah, like, actually, not funny. Real.
I would have been right there with Everett. But why do you think Baron is only in Everett's head?
This I genuinely do not know. I don't know if it's because just Everett was the one that he saw, or saw him, but like, did he project himself to Everett that time on purpose as well?
Right.
Well, it's very strange that he's singled out Everett for this instead of like one of his biologicals, but I don't know.
This is what I'm thinking. I wonder if this is possible because he was bitten, and the reason why he's not talking to Blake is that Blake is a lot more closed off than Everett is.
Yeah, it could be that he has a different connection with the ones he made.
Mm-hmm. With the information we have now, that's my only guess.
Yeah, no, I think so. And then just being like, he's the most receptive, I guess that could be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and I have podcasted a lot over the years. I don't even want to know how many hours of podcasting we've done together. There have been a few times. Yeah. There have been a few times in my life where I or one of the other podcasters, specifically I'm thinking of Mitch, because Mitch does this a lot, where we take something as an assumption and that colors everything that comes after it.
Okay.
I thought that a character in Avatar The Last Airbender, I thought I saw a spoiler that a character in, no, it was Korra, was going to die. Character definitely didn't die, but the entire, like, however many seasons
you're
that was.
You were spending this whole time.
Yeah, like just waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yeah.
And I remember that just being so funny by the time we got to the end. And I was like, wait, he didn't die? But we talked so much about how crazy Luna is that I'm just picking apart everything she does now. Because I was like, why was she not more freaked out that the werewolf's going to kill Austin? And I'm like, what if by the end of this season, like, we've just totally misjudged her the entire time, and she's like definitely one of the pack, totally a good guy.
Stuff to this degree, though. But if you were to go with this theory, it's kind of like, what do you think? She's like a puppet master here, like she's like aware of what's going on, she's wanting certain things to happen, she's secretly been like directing Baron what to do.
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I don't necessarily have any solid theories because I don't think she's super evil. I think if anything, she's misguided and maybe somebody is controlling her. Like, she's the puppet and somebody else is the puppet master. And maybe, like, she's not super worried about Austin because she's very sure that they're going to be able to save him, or that it's just meant to be, like, bait or something like that. But I don't know. I couldn't help being like, why aren't you more upset? Why aren't you trying to charge out the door to go after Austin to babysit
him? Maybe she just expresses her upset differently.
That's very possible.
I don't know. I do assume the worst of her a little.
Yeah.
But I'm not bad. Sure. It could be wrong.
Yeah. So yeah. Those two end up leaving. You know, they're trying to figure out a way to turn the werewolf back to human before he kills Austin. Harlan and Luna, peace out. Blake is kind of hanging back with Everett. And Everett says, okay, I'll get the car and I'll take you home. Everett's mom has no time for Blake, calling her a bit rugged for Everett.
Does she mean poor?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
That
doesn't surprise me.
It's not great.
Poor and Mexican is what she means.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Like, just to put it on the table there, like, it's very clearly that kind of level of, like, I've got no time for these people. I mean, Blake's house before the fire, you know, I think it was normal. I think there was, like, we don't know what the dad did for the job, but we know that it's a little bit of a rougher neighborhood than Everett, who seems very wealthy, basically.
Yeah.
So there's just a bit of, like, that classism.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, like, Blake's a bit rough around the edges for you, isn't she? Like, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess also just as a person, she's kind of a sporty, like, kind of like, you know, she's not like a particularly delicately dressed girl or something like that. Maybe his mum thought that he went for, like, very pretty, kind of dainty, frilly wearing, kind of typical girls like that. You know, regardless of what they look like, just someone who just is less of like a sneaker wearing person. I don't know. Sneaker wearing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I definitely know what you mean. And Everett, you know, rightly so, points out that his mom doesn't know anything about him anymore, talks about how he doesn't really play video games anymore like she thinks and all that kind of stuff. And I liked this part of Everett. I liked him standing up to his mom and being very calm about the situation. But like you said earlier, he kind of takes it beyond that point when he demands to take the car, which honestly, like, I kind of didn't mind because she's awful. And I was like, yeah, go Everett. And he was like, you should be nice to me. And the way he talks to her reminds me of his dad during that creepy scene. Like, I feel like the vibe was very, very similar between those two scenes.
Yeah, I think that there is a level, you know, right at the start where you kind of like, oh, he knows he feels strong. He knows he feels powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So is he going to start standing up to his mother's treatment? And then there's a little bit of like, you should be nice to me. I was like, are you trying to stop her from getting killed by the thing that thinks everyone is your enemy? So there was that element too.
Yeah, that's possible. It felt more threatening to me.
So weird.
Yeah.
And we don't know what the hell's up with his dad. We know that there's, like, definitely a bit of an oddness to his stern behavior, that turnaround that we saw with the pills. We know that there was, you know, incidents in the past that his father is medicated for some sort of mental health problem that has created, like, a nasty incident in the past. And we know that Everett is avoiding taking the same pill that treats that in his father.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a case to be made here that something's going on that's not right.
Yeah.
You know?
And I wonder if Everett has something that he's not aware of that he's being medicated for. Like, I think that's super illegal. Like, even a child. It
is so illegal.
I feel like you still have to tell the child what's going on.
I don't know. If you're a minor, maybe not. But we don't. I mean, Mike was trying to be like, if you know that your son, like, has problems and you accept your husband's problems, why are you so unsympathetic to your kid? And he's like, to saying that he's like, everything he's doing is like whining and whatever when you do care about helping this problem. But there was something a bit funny, a bit off. Not funny, haha.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'm very curious if this is a little bit of like the werewolf juice kind of getting him going, or if it's him being unmedicated that's getting him going. combination of both. I'm very, very interested to see where this plot line with the pills and the medication and his dad goes from here. But while this is happening, Blake's dad sends Danny to the room while he goes and checks out of the motel. They're going to get out of the motel. He's very specific with Danny. You know, I'm going to watch you go to the door. You're going to open the door. You're going to close it behind you. I'm going to check out. That's all you're going to do. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
We don't know exactly why this is happening. Is that right? At this point, we don't know what's happened yet. Or is it that this hasn't happened yet? Is this just their checkout because they know they're moving? Or is this the aftermath of them of Danny finding the body?
Just the checkout.
Okay.
Yeah. Because when Danny gets to the door, it is busted open. And there is blood everywhere.
I forgot this order of things. Yeah.
Like a body has been dragged along the carpet through the room. And we do eventually see, because this scene kind of gets cut up a little bit, but Phoebe is in the bathtub. And the authorities are called in. And Kristen very specifically, like, is talking to Jang and is like, I don't want to be taken off the case. She thinks that this is just the first body they've found, but not the first person who's been killed. And of course, they know like people have been missing, but they haven't been finding any bodies. And she does such a good job of acting innocent here. But what's her actual objective? Is it just to stay close to the investigation?
Yeah, maybe to keep covering shit up.
Mm.
She's killed at least one person in this investigation.
Yeah.
So if she knows that there are murders and stuff going on and she knows who the murderer is, her son.
Right.
I feel like you wouldn't just be like, okay, I'll let it go.
Yeah.
You know? Or do you mean like what excuse is she making publicly?
Well, the part that stands out to me is that she's not just like, I want to stay involved. She's putting the idea into Jang's head that there are more bodies, which maybe like they've discussed it before. Maybe this isn't, you know, revelatory news, but these theories could somewhat incriminate her or lead to what she doesn't want to happen, which is, you know, them finding the werewolf and them fucking everything up, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, she's also right in that they haven't actually charged the arson suspect. Like, her job isn't technically over in that department. But, I mean, it's just got to be the fact that she just wants to be able to stay as close as she can in order to, like, put things in the directions that she wants them to be to cover up. I don't know.
Yeah, or at least, at the very least, just stay informed, you know? Just so she knows who knows what and what's going on and where it's happening and all of that. Everett and Blake do eventually arrive on the scene and they kind of run through the tape. And she, you know, Blake's first thought is, of course, what's going on with Danny and everything. Danny tells her that he recognizes Kristen from the parking garage. She thinks he means the parking lot. But he recognizes her from the parking garage and he's gripping her hand like he's terrified.
So I'm wondering if Danny can just like straight up see through the werewolf's form.
That would be interesting.
To be honest, like to be very honest, that is where I am at.
Or like, was she just lurking?
Or on the camera, maybe maybe they spoke when Blake went up to Phoebe. We know that Danny saw the werewolf. Maybe she was catching up with the werewolf in the parking garage. Maybe the werewolf and Kristen had an altercation because Kristen was protecting Danny or something. And just, it was just like, you know, Danny came away from this with like a handful of werewolf fur.
Yeah.
We didn't really see how they interacted, but maybe Kristen was there and stepped in.
Right.
Before, I wonder him. If we'll get back the CCTV footage or something like that, or if they've cleared it. But yeah, I assume that while Blake was up on the other level, that Kristen, either she was there in werewolf form and he could see through the werewolf form, or she was there in normal form and kind of had an altercation between him and the werewolf.
Yeah. I don't know. I do hope we get a flashback. I hope we get a lot of flashbacks with Kristen, just like I was saying last week with Baron, like him being there all along, but us not like really realizing it. That would be kind of interesting. But Kristen walks up to them and says that she'll need to talk to Blake eventually. She's not like super worried that Blake is the one that murdered Phoebe, but at least her dad is aware enough to be like, yeah, you know, we're going to make sure there's a lawyer present for this one. And she straight up asks him, is that going to be a court-appointed lawyer? Are you going to have your own? And her dad replies, look at that, Blake. She's just like you. Goes right for the throat.
Aww.
And it's so, like, this is the show. This is not the character, you know, winking at us. This is the show winking at us, because this turns out to be very, very true.
It's, yeah, it's quite intense.
Did you have the same reaction to this line as the other one?
I kind of did, in terms of the show being like, oh, these are the same type of, you know, oh, it's because they're the same. Not quite as much as like the I am your mother line, but they're really not trying. If it's not this, it'll be, you know, pretty silly. But we do have a fair amount of evidence at this point that it is this in the episode.
Yeah. And this really isn't even the end of that, because Blake agrees to talk as long as nothing happens to Danny. And the implication here is that Blake will tell her about werewolves, and Kristen's like, yeah, I'll believe you. You know, they don't say that out loud, but that's definitely the conversation they're having. And Kristen says, I think I might surprise you on that subject, both of you, talking to Blake and Danny. So she obviously knows Danny is a little afraid of her at the moment.
Yeah, I assume that if she talks to them both together, she will talk about the incident in the parking garage, maybe, and just come clean with everyone about, at least with the werewolf age kids. I feel like maybe she'd be okay telling the werewolf kids the truth, but she doesn't want them to tell Garrett. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see, like, too much more of them having that conversation yet, did we?
No, I mean, that's pretty much the end of it before Kristen goes off with Garrett. And I think you make a really good point. Like, she must think either she's able to manipulate the kids a lot more easily than Garrett, so she's fine having that conversation with him and not Garrett, or because she's really their mother and a part of this pack and she's like them, that they'll be more sympathetic to like what she's trying to say.
I just think that there's probably people that she doesn't want to know the information full stop, and she doesn't know how far that will spread. But I feel like, I mean, obviously next week we've got to know, but I feel like, you know, there's probably a very good reason that she's not telling Harlan and Luna the truth.
Right, not just coming out with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people would, but there's clearly an angle here for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what she's willing to tell Blake, basically.
Yeah. And if she's aware that Blake has been the most hesitant out of all of them, if that's going to play into it at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do not know.
But Blake's
also, so weird.
Blake's also very desperate to protect her brother. And Kristen knows that now.
Yeah.
So I guess it just
sounds like she's ready to share with them. And I'm just like, well, okay, show me.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, come on, show me. But no.
Now, before Kristen and Garrett team up together here in a second, because we're going to kind of follow their plot line for a little bit, Garrett and Luna do have a conversation where Garrett pretty much forbids Luna from doing anything to save Baron. And they talk a lot about werewolf myths in this scene and whether any of them are true or reliable. And this is what we were kind of talking about before. We don't really know what the rules of this world are. We don't really know what kind of foundation we're standing on. And I wonder if this concept will come back later, either some of the myths that they mention about, like, you know, if a woman has seven daughters, and has a son as her eighth child, the son will be a werewolf.
Oh, that's going to be it. That turn out that that's going to be the whole answer. The clue is it's like an eighth son of a mother to seven daughters.
Yeah. But I'm just so curious if we're going to keep revisiting these werewolf myths that aren't like super mainstream. You know, I wouldn't say most people know that particular werewolf myth. And if that's the case, like, I'd be super interested in that, like kind of expanding on the lore that pop culture has seen when it comes to werewolves.
Yeah, and kind of picking and choosing, like, the idea maybe of, like, where all those myths come from. Like, if each one has a grain of reality and that they've all spiraled out in different directions.
And,
you know,
the show kind of does its own take on that. That would be really cool.
Yes, I think that I would like to see the murder board of how Jeff came up with this werewolf reality.
I know, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Kristen and Garrett decide to go to the construction site since it's where the arson originated.
So then they think they're still pretty sure that the firefighter, not the firefighter, the fire lighter flew drones from this building.
Right. I think they're pretty much accepting that as fact at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. So Kristen tells Garrett that her husband also died in the fire, protecting her son. And then she says that he wasn't perfect and that she wishes her son had a father like Garrett. And it was some weird vibes.
Yeah. I have no idea if the dead husband is going to matter, like if it's someone else that we know, if it's actually someone related to that firefighting team or anything like that. But it's just, you know, clearly this werewolf family of hers has got a bit of a mess going on. But we're talking about, in this case, the potential for, yeah, I guess, like, was this relationship good or bad? What about this guy wasn't perfect? Or what about this wolf wasn't perfect? What is she implying? Is she implying that he killed lots of people? Or what? Like, or is she implying maybe that he was not that good at protecting the werewolf secret? You know, what's Garrett done that's better than her ex-husband?
Stayed alive.
And his child raising of their puppy that didn't die.
Stuck around?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really know. Like, you know, what if we're taking, you know, the flashback that's about to come up as fact, and then we're combining that with story from the firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about a werewolf couple, mother and father, with at least one, probably three, maybe more, cubs. And we're thinking that one of them got killed all the way, like the story that they told, that they put 60 bullets in it and then dropped a tree on it. And then the girl werewolf attacked them and killed a bunch of people as well. But it was not in its wolf form. It was in its Sarah Michelle Gellar form. All we know about this werewolf guy is that he got shot with 60 bullets and then had a tree dropped on him and allegedly died. Right. We don't know what exactly he did that was not great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whole world of options available.
Have we asked the question whether or not the voice on the phone is the father?
No, but that could definitely be possible if the father is still alive.
Mm-hmm. Because I was thinking about your idea a couple episodes ago where you're like, what if it's somebody in a hospital who's like kind of unable to move or get around or really do anything other than tell them bits and pieces of what's actually happening.
Yeah. And I mean, they could be working together or it could be working. They could be working separately.
Yeah. It would be interesting if she didn't realize her husband was alive and they're working against each other, like unknowingly. She doesn't know about.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
So yeah, okay. I think that is incredibly possible.
And the husband is Peter Hale.
Yeah.
I mean, he did start off in a hospital all burnt and kind of comatose. So
why change what works?
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get to that in a second, but let's talk about this flashback real quick. So it's from, you know, sort of from Kristen's point of view, or at least we get to see a lot more of her this time around. And it, you know, fairly matches up with what Malcolm told us in the last episode. Basically, the wolf in actual wolf form, although it did look quite large, approaches the hotshot crew and transforms into a woman who starts attacking them. The transformation I thought was pretty cool. I couldn't like 100% tell at first whether she was like burnt or like covered in soot or if it was just like dirt or anything. But I thought that it was really creepy and it was a little bit different from the kind of transformations that we've seen in other pieces of media. But my question also was, why did she transform into a human-esque version of herself instead of attacking as a wolf? Did she just really need her thumbs to like pluck out somebody's eyes?
I actually think that if the claws are sharp enough to slit, I think that slashing nails across throats is a way easier way to kill people than like mauling with the mouth while other people could go for your body, if you know what I mean. So yeah. I actually think it's more efficient if you have werewolf claws to just go like on people.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I didn't really think about that. And I had asked in here and you had sent me a picture, so like that was actually Sarah Michelle Gellar in that like makeup,
a lot of makeup and like a CGI naked body.
yeah
very strange burnt body.
Yeah, it's pretty.
But it had a wig, a big, wild, sort of tawny-haired wig.
Yeah.
But it looks like cool, it was though. Her. She posted some makeup pictures, which, I mean, I assume she wasn't taking pictures of some other girl. It looked like her. She looks so young, though. But
yeah.
But, yeah.
That was really cool. I would love to get some, like, behind-the-scenes
100% werewolf.
Yeah.
She is definitely the mate in question with the story from Deucalion.
Yes. And she's the werewolf mama, like, for sure. And, yeah. I mean, there's a chance that maybe this was a different litter of puppies because we kind of had questioned, you know, how many werewolves were actually running around in the woods and all of that. But I think it's become pretty obvious that, like, yeah, she is Baron and Harlan and Luna's biological mother.
Yeah. I mean, they possibly can only give birth in wolf form if they're having three babies at once. It's doable for a human, but it's not that normal. So maybe she has to spend the whole pregnancy as a wolf.
Yeah. Or what if she had more? It's like, okay, well, I'm pregnant with octuplets. I'd rather push them out as puppies.
Connor, you know?
Yeah.
All of these people. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So out of this flashback, Garrett and Kristen are going through the elevator doors into where we know the nest of bodies is. I really don't understand
whose idea it was to come to the construction site and why.
I feel like it's Kristen's. Like, that's
I'm going to bring you now to the pile of bodies.
Yeah. Like, this is the thing. Like, he was like, this is the door. And she's like, yeah, that's the door. Like, I don't think that it didn't feel like he was dragging her there. They were either there mutually.
They don't know what they were there to investigate again.
Right. But, like, it was kind of her being like, yeah, I think this place is really significant. Actually, I think she does say that at the top of the scene. She's like, we've been through this building a bunch of times. And I think she kind of implied that she wanted a fresh set of eyes, that he's been very helpful, that she wants him to see what's going on here. Because ultimately, my takeaway was that she led him to the bodies. And so the question here is, if she's leading him to the bodies, but she's reaching for her gun at the same time, she wants him to tell her he knows about werewolves, but isn't willing to be the first to admit it.
Maybe she just wanted to get him to the position where she could kill him and decides not to.
Yeah.
Maybe she's not sure what she's gonna
Garrett do. Taking the flashlight did make me laugh. That was pretty great. Do you think
he knows?
I don't. I think it was lucky.
Because she kept eyeing up that flashlight the whole time. She kept being like, ooh, am I gonna hit him with this? Ooh, yeah. Am I? I hit someone with this. Am I gonna hit him? Like, the whole time she's constantly like
yeah, you know she's, I mean, like, gripping it, and the show's, like, zooming like in on her hand.
In her eyes. Yeah, she keeps, like, flicking to it. She's like, ooh, might hit him with it. Oh, yeah. No, I better not. Oh, but maybe I will.
Yeah.
So I didn't know where it was going, really.
I think, ultimately, the only conclusion that I can come to is that she wanted to show him the nest of bodies to see what he would do. And I think he ultimately does what she wants him to do, which is he asks her not to call it in so that his kids don't get taken away from him. And he asks her to trust him, but she kind of doubles down on like needing to call it in and everything. And she prods him like, was this a person who like, did all this?
Like,
is
she playing a game here? Like, why would she call? Like, she knows perfectly well it's there. So what is this act of?
Yeah. I think that the only thing that I can think of is that she wants him to say it out loud first. She wants him to put his trust in her before she can put her trust in him. Because she's very insistent, like, is this a person? And he's like, yes and no. And you can tell that she's just like, just say it out loud. And then we can be on the same page and we can get married and have our kids together or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so strange. Some of it as well, I'm a bit like, is she herself torn? Like, obviously she killed the guard and she knew about the pile for a while, but when they go down into the hole, like, is it a real change of heart? Like, or is she really good at playing the game? Because the way she's like, I have to call it in, like, it's quite frantic and she looks quite horrified. I don't know. She could be compartmentalizing.
Yeah.
Or it could just be really playing the game with Garrett, like doing the role of like how she would have to act responsibly.
Mm-hmm. I think she is good at playing that role. But at the same time, I keep coming back to this idea of like mothers protecting their children, especially like animals, you know, they will throw themselves into the line of fire in order for their children to survive. And I think all, you know, her killing the guard very much felt like that. And her talking to Garrett in the way that she is, I think she sees sort of an equal in him, like a potential spouse or partner or something like that in him, because he clearly loves those kids like his own. And I don't think she wants to take that away from Harlan and Luna. And maybe she's been lonely and stuff. But I think ultimately it's like, okay, you got to be on my side or you're going to die. And I think she's still waiting to figure out like where he's going to land on that.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously she knows what he's talking about when he's talking about like, oh, there are things about my kids that people don't know. And she's like, what if they did know?
Yeah.
Like Luna, she wants everyone to accept their werewolfdom. I don't know. And it's just like, yeah, the fact that she's just like, come on, come on, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
It is like, it's weird. It is. I don't know if there's something, you know, about what she's experiencing that, yeah, she means that. I don't understand why she can't just be like, look, I know your kids are werewolves. So am I. Like, as in just like tell her that she knows about them and don't give him time to react badly. Like, just spill it all out, girl. But I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, there must be a reason why she's holding back. I just feel like there's some other angle here that is making it so that she just cannot tell him yet. I don't know.
It's very obvious. Like she says, you know, sometimes, you know, she says, when he says, what is it, a person, you know, she's not too stoked on that because obviously she doesn't want to associate the kid with the monster and she sees them as separate. She calls him out about the silver bullets and the superstition.
Mm-hmm.
Just say it. Just say it, guys. Come on.
Yeah. But that ends, you know, their part in this episode for now. We don't really get much of a resolution to this. The last thing that they sort of say is like, yes, it's a person, but also no, it's not a person. So we get to really sort of the climax and the conclusion of the episode, which is that the pack is trying to come up with a plan. Specifically, Everett and Harlan are trying to come up with a plan. And I really, really loved this scene because they okay, first of all, let's just get it out of the way. Everett's plan is basically to kill the werewolf, and then when it changes, resuscitate the human so that they can actually talk to Baron.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is one option.
Right.
To kind of kill the monster, and then it'll transform back into a person and then resuscitate the person. Like, so technically kill it for a minute.
But their plan is to freeze him, to stop the heart, but it'll still be sending, like, the brain will still have oxygen, so even though the heart stopped, the brain's still technically alive. Does this sound familiar?
I don't know. Is this a trap? Is this a trick question?
No, Teen Wolf.
At what point do we do this? Were you talking about with the ice sacrifices? Baths. The ice bath?
Yeah.
I mean, this Bardo. Is just like science, though. This is just
science.
No,
I know. But I just thought that the comparison was
I guess this is like one use that, especially given that we had that Bardo plot in the Teen Wolf movie. But yes, I suppose this is one way. You know, they do like to ground the magic and the myth in a little bit of science. They did in Teen Wolf. We're going to do a bit of a logical science for how something, you know, would have worked biologically. And I guess this is one element that they're like, yeah, we're going to cross that scientific fact over because it's just good science.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. For sure that it is the same principle of that kind of death for Teen Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The fact that Allison and Stiles and Scott all technically died in that moment. It worked for them.
It did.
Except they were meant to have like a darkness around their heart for the rest of time.
Yeah.
Which was certainly true for Stiles. Allison, unsure because we haven't seen how she's going to react to being alive again.
Yeah. But Everett also tells Harlan, by the way, Cyrus, don't worry about him. We'll get him out. We know he's innocent. And Harlan's little smile of appreciation was so cute.
Yeah, I do miss Cyrus already. Two. I kind of like him.
You did want these two to be friends, and I feel like they've got a little budding friendship going on.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, like, creepy scene aside, Everett is really confident and bold in this episode, and I do like it, although I feel like it's bordering a little bit on manic, and so I wonder if, like, the other shoe's going to drop at some point.
Do you think he's being controlling?
I don't know about controlling. I think manic, for me, is probably the best word to apply to, like, how he's coming off.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I don't think it's 100% good, no.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just got to be something else going on there. So, I mean, it's good for now. Like, he's being very proactive about things, but I think at some point, like, it's going to drop.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that, yeah, there's a level of maybe aggression. It's not aggressive, but I feel like there's something building inside him that's just a bit different to his best self.
Yeah, we'll see, I guess. So that is their plan for the werewolf, and they are definitely going to use Austin as bait, which Austin totally agrees to. He's like, yeah, let's do it. You know, I think he's afraid, but he's definitely willing.
They're gonna kill me anyway.
Yeah,
kill me. I kind of like him. Like, I kind of like that attitude.
Yeah, I kind of
do. Still
too.
Like him.
I'm like so, him more. Natalie, I'm so mixed on him right now. I don't like. Why do I always have to like the weirdos? I don't get this.
Like, you mean like Matt?
Yes. Austin is my new Matt.
Oh, look, that's so weird, Karen. I don't know.
Look,
I just like the normal douchebags who are obviously going to be beautiful, sweet people inside, like Jackson and Harlan. You like the fucking psychopaths who have got like some twisted motive.
Okay, this is getting too real. We're just going to bypass that. And talk about the conversation between Austin and Luna, which I actually did think was very interesting because Austin's like, I've only got one question for you. do you actually like me? And she's like, you don't want to ask me about werewolves? Like, she was so hurt.
I think she was confused because also, like, you know, they're about to almost get him killed. Like, do you not have concerns about what the hell you're walking into?
Mm.
That being his main question, I guess for me, it's like, is there a motive there of how well will you protect me? Or has he liked her the whole time too? Because I feel like he doesn't. He didn't before.
Mm.
And now he's like, maybe I do. But I don't know. He's very strange.
Yeah, I mean,
he's very self-assured in a weird way.
Yeah, in like a detached kind of way.
Yeah.
I actually read that a little bit differently, that maybe he had been into her the whole time.
Yeah, it could be.
And maybe just didn't think it was real or didn't really, like, maybe, you know, he thought she was hot but, like, didn't really know her well enough to, like, actually be into her or something.
I liked him differentiating, like, I know that you've had a crush on me, but do you actually like me? As in, like, the difference between, you know, that idea of, like, fixating on someone from afar, but, like, is this real?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And she says, you know, a little less than sometimes is her answer, which I kind of liked, that she was being honest. She wasn't trying to sugarcoat it or anything. And he said he was good with that. And I will say, this scene, I was quite happy with. I thought it was kind of cute. And I was like, you know, if this was a person in real life, definitely red flags. But it's fiction, so it's okay.
Yeah, okay.
But they end up, you know, the plan's going through. They dip a knife in silver. They get some epinephrine from Cody. And they are ready to go.
And the silver dipping knife thing's kind of cool. I like that it looks kind of raw and rustic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. While they're waiting for everything to start, Blake does Lion's Breath. Because it works. And this is the title name, but this is really the only time that we, like, talk about it, see it, or anything like that. I kind of expected it to be a little bit more significant throughout the episode.
The Lion's Breath element.
Yeah.
I guess. I think it's more, yeah, she only does it in this moment, but maybe it's just more about, like, the state of everyone's mental situation. Like, they should all stop and do some.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Stop and think before you use your kind of friend as bait.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it works out for him in the end, but we'll see what happens next week. But this whole scene of them trapping the werewolf, I actually loved, and I think is one of my favorite sequences in the series so far. So Austin and Luna are on the rooftops waiting for the werewolf. And she's there because she can smell him coming. And she's kind of protecting him, but at the same time, she's kind of also there to rile things up a little bit because she's like, you got to hit me. Like, he's not going to attack because I'm here with you. So you got to hit me and, like, get him going. And he kisses her instead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, her brother doesn't like that, apparently.
Super overprotective. Older brother, maybe. I guess we don't really know that, but it definitely does the trick. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the genius part is they run away, and Blake lures the werewolf away by wearing Austin's sweatshirt, and she's the only one that can really, like, outrun the werewolf in this form. So she's got to lead him to the freezer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why they started out positioned so far from the freezer, to be honest, but never mind. They all have this their role to play. So
And so Harlan can hear them coming, so they kind of prepare. Everett is there to use his super strength. And they do end up, it gets very close. There are a couple of moments where you're really worried about Blake, you're really worried about Everett, but the whole pack comes together and works as one. And Everett ends up saying Baron's name, and it slows him down enough that they are able to trap him within the freezer. And they all tap into Harlan's power in order to hear as the werewolf's heart slows down.
Yeah, everyone's got a job.
Yeah. I really liked it. Did you like the sequence?
Yeah, I think that it is good to see how they all do that together. I don't know if I was maybe expecting it more to be a moment where they're all a bit Captain Planet, like where they can all tap into each other, if you know what I mean. Like that anyone can do one of the four. Oh my God, what if they can
turn into a super wolf?
Like all together, like a transformer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Power Rangers.
Yeah. That seems probably not true, but I think that's now all you want. That's all you want now.
Yes, it is.
I thought maybe it would be more like they were tapping into each other, but we don't know how much they know how to do that yet. They do know how to efficiently use their own shit as like a, you know, how to let that flow, like everyone pick up the part that they need to pick up.
Right.
So, you know, what can't they do together, Karen?
I know. The world's at their fingertips. Yeah. And this is the first time that we see them tap into Everett's strength, too, as they're trying to hold that door, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just like, can they contain all four at once? Like, can each one contain, or is it like when they're tapping into Everett, do their own ones go? This is what I'm actually asking. Can they be all four at once?
Right. That would be really interesting. I wonder if that's like you got to level up, like you got to gain enough XP to be able to get to that next level.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense, actually.
Yeah. But my question is, if this monster, if Baron is part of their pack, is he not able to tap into their powers too?
Maybe they're not quite properly bonded yet. I don't know. Maybe it's not that easy. Like, he's very undisciplined. He's very wild.
Right.
You know?
Corrupted.
He's a mess. Yeah. Like, he's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And using that stuff, yes, the moments where they've taken it from each other have been, like, super instinctive, but they're still coming from, in my opinion, like some level of discipline, some place of discipline, because they have been prepared to do it. Like, as in, like, they knew it was possible. They just going to let it happen when it happens, but they know what's happening when it does. And it's kind of like, it's something they have been striving to try for.
Yeah.
And it's more like, oh, when it comes in naturally, okay, let's lock onto that. Whereas Baron is just like wild.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's that.
I think there's a point to be made as well that, like, the four of them are on the same page. Even when they were, like, arguing in that detention center or whatever that was, the displacement facility, like, they were all basically like, oh, we have to be on the same page. Like, they wanted to get away with lying to the authorities because that was the best thing for them to do. Whereas, like, here, very obviously, Baron is not on the same page as them. So maybe it only works when they truly, like, their objectives align.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that that level of in syncness, whether it's intentional or instinctive, that level of sync is probably very key.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a conscious thing. That's the thing. It's not like, oh, I'm going to turn it on now, you know, not yet at least. It's not a conscious thing that they're able to do where they can be like, okay, now I'm going to put on my Harlan ears, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think it would happen at all if they weren't open to each other,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I wonder if the possessor of the power can also kind of choose. Again, it's not conscious because, like, Harlan doesn't choose to let Everett do that, but it's more like it's an unconscious connection where they've chosen that trust.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, like, it was subconscious, but he was like, he wanted Everett to hear him. Moment.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, actually, as well. That is true.
Yeah.
He did, like, technically want that.
Right.
So it could be a choice of the holder.
Yeah, that could make sense. I would be into that. That'd be cool. But the end of this episode, you know, they're about to save Baron. They want to try to resuscitate him. And Austin just walks right in and stabs the dude in the heart.
Why?
Did this shock you?
I mean, kind of. Yeah.
I was pretty shocked.
Do you think he was planning to do that the whole time? Do you think he thinks he's just done, like, a really heroic thing? Or, like, do you think that he's just like, fuck all y'all?
I think he's like, fuck all y'all. Like, I think that was his plan from the beginning. I think as soon as he agreed to do it, like, as soon as he heard the plan, he knew what he was going to do.
But why? Just because he wants to kill the werewolf that scared him?
Probably, like...
Did they explain? I mean, they did explain to him that it's like a person who is innocent, right? Like, yeah, because part of that.
He knew the resuscitating part.
Yeah.
I think in his mind, and I almost can't blame him for this, because this is a monster who's killed, like, what, 18, 19 people at this point, killed some people that he went to school with, killed Phoebe. Like, he saw that right in front of his eyes. He's probably traumatized. He's like, if I let them bring this kid back to life, then it could go on another rampage and I'm probably going to die anyway. It's very much like survivor instinct.
Well, it's not great, is it?
No, it's really.
Do you think
really
Baron
not.
Can survive this?
I legitimately thought he was dead until we saw the preview for next week.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And that's a question that I want to ask real quick, too. Do you think Baron has his own superpower? And if so, what do you think?
Yeah, 100%, but I don't know what it is.
No guesses?
Sight?
Oh, that could be a good one.
Or something mental to do with emotions. Like that level of, like... Yeah, either sight
or maybe some sort of like telepathy kind of thing.
That's what I'm saying, like a mental, like an empathy thing, I mean, I don't know if that projecting to Everett is just because that's what would happen to any werewolf in that circumstance, but maybe some level of mind influence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yes, I definitely do think that he has something. Hearing, strength. I don't know, maybe he's really good at licking things.
I was going to say taste. Maybe he's like Remy from Ratatouille and he's just like a really good cook. That would be useful to the pack.
We're so normal, Karen. I'm feeling very normal about this.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. Like it could be some other reflex or sense, or it could be something more like maybe he can talk to animals or something. I don't know.
That would be kind of neat.
So it's either he's going to be like Remy.
Yeah.
Or he's going to be like freaking Cinderella. Not Cinderella. Who talks to animals? Snow White?
Snow White, yeah.
I don't know. One of them. Ella Enchanted. Or he's going to be, I feel like, vision or something to do with projection, something mental. I don't know. But they are seeing him. All of the others are seeing him for the first time, right? Like, none of them have actually seen him. They don't know what he looks like.
Except for Everett. Only
Everett. And so they're seeing him and they're kind of very gentle with him before the stabbing.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about the preview for episode 8, aka the finale, which is just nuts. I feel like there's so much I still want to know. This is actually the longest preview that we've gotten so far.
It's quite a bit of detail.
Yeah, we get a lot of flashes. The first one being that they are wheeling multiple bodies out. I think like after having just finished this episode, it feels like, okay, that's going to be Baron's body. But because there are multiple bodies.
No, it's got to be the whole.
It's the nest.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. And Kristen also very specifically says she does not trust Garrett. And so she called it in, clearly. Maybe because he wouldn't tell her.
No, I think maybe he called it in.
Oh, really? But he didn't want to.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe he called it in and that's why she's mad. And she's like, I was giving you so many hints. Yeah. Because she's looking at the situation, right? She's looking at the bodies coming out. She looks at him and she's mad. She says, everything changes now, Garrett. And he's like, do you trust me? And it feels to me like she's watching the circumstance play out. She doesn't approve of it. She's like, Garrett, fuck you. Why'd you do this? And he's like, do you trust me? I think he called it in, but I am ready to be wrong.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they're also really ramping up this idea that there's a lot more going on with Kristen, which obviously we find out in this week's episode. But Blake realizes Danny was talking about the parking garage. So hopefully we'll get some flashback or some information about what actually went down there. It also seemed like Blake wanted to let Baron die. And of course, this could be like edits and stuff like that. But just I kind of... where she was, I think they were still in the freezer at that point or something. I feel like they were definitely debating on whether to try to save Baron's life or not.
Yeah, it could be.
Mm-hmm. Now, we keep talking about Luna going to a dark place. She is the one who says there is no pack anymore.
Yeah. I feel like that she, you know, have found out something that's made her splinter off. Or that I don't think it's just Baron's death or whatever, he's not death. I think that like something has come into play that's like changed her mind about things, or it could be that she had an idea all along that in secret, but not so positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also see Everett saying, I'm not a danger to myself, and I'm real worried that they're going to lock him up somewhere.
Yeah, I think that he's clearly got some mental, I'm hoping at least that this isn't just like, oh, we think you're delusional because you're a werewolf, and it's a show actually saying, Everett, you've got a mental health issue that you are not medicating because you think that you're better than God or better than science or whatever because you're a werewolf now, but actually you still need to take the medication.
Yeah.
But I mean, his parents aren't looking like a great source of like trustworthiness.
Yeah.
So it's a bit confusing in that respect. I do think there's something very wrong with him and his father, that, and maybe that lack of medication is going to start fucking with his judgment in this way in the finale. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to start being really out of line in some way.
Yeah. I'm worried about it. But we also see Baron talking to Cyrus saying, I'll kill anyone who threatens my pack. And I really feel like this could be a flashback to the party. And this could be why Cyrus used that term pack.
That is a good point. If they were like sitting out having a chat earlier at the party.
Right. So, like, potentially Baron was there in person in human form.
Just hanging out.
Yeah. Which I'm not really
like,
sure.
I do feel like Cyrus just got a whole bunch of information. Like, I do think he knew what he meant when he said pack.
Mm-hmm.
So that could make sense.
Yeah.
But then I think that, you know, there's something weird about Cyrus's situation that we need to know more about.
Right. That scene could definitely be like a present tense kind of thing, but I think it would be so interesting and fit really well if it was a sort of flashback and we kind of get that like, oh, Baron was there all along. Here's all the times like we didn't know he was there, filling in a lot of those gaps for us.
Yeah.
But that brings up another interesting question then, because is he able to control when he's the monster versus when he's in human form? Or is the monster doing that for him and he's just like not aware of it even when he's a human?
I mean, I think he's aware of it because he's freaked out that he's being dragged around by this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But incapable of stopping it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last shot of the preview for next week is Kristen cuddling with Luna.
Yeah. I'm wondering if she's been in on it the whole time.
I mean, that would be, it would make sense.
I mean, it could just be that she's just found out and that's why she kind of turns on people. Like, she's like, actually, I'm going with my mom and all of y'all suck and I just want my mom and all of you suck. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's very clear that in that cuddling moment, they look like they're like on the run somewhere. I mean, it could just be Luna's bedroom, but it's very
Luna's bedroom.
It just looks like on either side of the bed, like it's very tightly boxed in. Especially she does have that kind of weird, like built-in thing in her room. It could be her room. It is a bit of a strange setup, her bedroom. But the fact that, you know, I don't know, she doesn't look so asleep that she doesn't know that Kristen's there. You know, this is, it doesn't seem like Kristen's being like a total creep with her.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, so they must have found some sort of understanding.
Mm-hmm. And I think that would make so much sense, too, with Luna's insistence on Garrett's my dad, this other thing's not my dad. Like,
yeah, I said werewolf mother. I said it. It was so obvious. Like, sorry, no offense, but it was so clear that fixation on father.
It was super obvious.
But
it's so funny because, like, when we were interviewing Tyler, you had said that to him.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like,
I think his answer was right, though.
He had like a really good answer. His answer was right. Very smooth.
Not just in terms of like, oh, a red herring, but in terms of the kids jump to father because mm-hmm. they don't think any other way about parent.
Right.
If you know what I mean, it's like the hang up is Garrett's not my dad. Where's my real dad? It's not like, oh, I can have both. I can have my real adopted dad, Garrett, and my real biological mum, Kristen. Like, it's more like for the character, it's not about whether it logistically is the mum or dad. It's that in their brain, father is what's going to come up for them.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that he, you know, gave anything away or anything like that.
No.
It was very good, but I just kind of am laughing at like you asking that question and him definitely knowing the answer to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was very obvious that just this hounding on father made me raise an eyebrow. So I'm kind of glad that we ended up being right about that.
Yeah.
And now I'm just super curious about how long Luna has known about it.
Yeah. That's
if she has, obviously, but
I don't know if she has known the whole time or not, but I feel like it's a possibility.
Yeah. So we'll just have to see. Next week is the finale. I'm super excited, but man, I hope they give us a lot of answers.
Yeah, that's true. I don't really have any predictions at this point, aside from what we've talked about during the course of the episode. Like, I don't have any big, wild hot takes at the end here.
Yeah. But if you guys have any...
Except Mortal Kombat.
Right, I know. I was going to mention it.
Power Rangers.
Yes. So if you think it's Mortal Kombat or if you think it's Power Rangers, let us know. We'll run a poll. See who... Which way you guys are leaning. Write in. Let us know. Find us online. Very interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Yep.
So thank you for tuning in. And we will talk to you next week about the finale.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Everett and Harlot. Is that their ship name?
Harlot. Sure. Yeah.
Harlan would love that.